At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu. To the old me, scared and unseen, you're the reason I built this dream. Now I speak so others thrive. Turn my scars into sound. I come alive from the ashes and the breakdown. I don't run, I rise, won't back down. This is the voice I found. For those who lost their voice, I sing it loud. I keep it real, keep it purpose bound. Every word a step, every truth profound. We don't heal in silence, we fight with grace, softness and defiance, lighting up this place. It's a call to every soul who wants to be free. A song for
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, everybody, I'm Naomi Ekperrigan.
And I'm Andy Beckerman.
We're a real-life couple and a real-life couple of comedians. And we're the hosts of the podcast Couples Therapy.
We're the only comedy relationship podcast ever. Yeah, I said it. And we're so good, we've been written up in both the New York Times and we made Grindr's list of top podcasts.
Yes, we're giving you that high-low appeal. Trust. On the show, we talk to guests like Bob the Drag Queen, Angelica Ross,
Bowen Yang, Janelle James, Danny Pudi, Darcy Carden, Paul F. Tompkins,
and more. All about love, mental health, and everything in between. And we answer your relationship questions. We are two unlicensed comedians just trying to help you out.
So open your hearts, loosen your butts, because we got a lot of laughs
and a lot of real talk just for you.
Download Couples Therapy wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Edna White. I am your host for Keeping It Real on Purpose. And today we have none other than Regina Lawless, who is an author. And I believe she's kind of like an entrepreneur, because you have to be an entrepreneur when you're an author, because you got to make that money. So she's going to talk to us today about her book, Do You. Because see, when you're doing you, you're doing business. Welcome to the show, Regina Lawless.
I love it. Thank you, Edna. Thank you so much for having me.
I am excited to have you here because I love all the colors on your book. I love it all. And it gets me energized. Tell us how you show up in the world as an author.
Great question. So how I show up as an author is through love. I feel like that's how I try to show up as a human being. Is to be a light for people and to share how I have come to be more of a force for love and goodness in the world. And that's having gone through a lot in my life. So I didn't arrive at kind of being this state of love overnight. Although I believe we all start with that as children, but life kind of weathers us, right?
Yes. Like
we go through some things. And for me, I ended up, you know, suffering the loss of my husband, which I write about in the book. But that also for me has brought me back to love, and trying to honor that love, which grief is really about anyways, is really the, mm-hmm. the honoring the love that you had for that person. And that's how I want this book to show up and be a beacon for love and for hope.
Okay. So you talk, I want to get into this now, because you talk about grief being that I guess the gatekeeper of love. Talk to us about how you kind of process that to move it forward.
Yeah. So it was heavy. It was heavy. If for your listeners, if they've ever lost someone close to them, they understand how difficult, and difficult is an understatement. For me, I was married to my husband for almost 18 years. We were together for 21 years. So I met him when I was 18. So my entire adult life, I had been with this man, and we had built a life together. We have a son together. And so when I lost him, the first thing that I had to deal with before even the grief was the shock. My husband was 45 when he passed away. So I was 40, he was 45. He died of a heart attack. So that sudden loss, I had to even wrap my mind around that.
Yeah.
And I was having panic attacks in the first, you know, days and weeks after he had passed on. And then the just depression set in, just the sadness, the confusion, the anger, the longing. Like every day I was like longing for him to walk back through the door, to the point of like delusion. Like you have to kind of like recognize yourself, right? Like this person is gone, and it takes time to accept that in your mind so that you can move forward. So after I got through those initial weeks of just trying to make sense of things, I sought therapy, which I know you are a proponent of and talk about.
Yes, girl.
I'm telling you, I had to, and thankfully I had a fantastic Black woman therapist, and she did what's called EMDR. Saying that right?
You're right.
All the therapists listening. And that really, when I tell you, Edna, that really started to shift me in my grief, by being able to reprocess those memories. And that, like, I was ruminating on the day leading up to his passing. Could I have done more? I should have saved him. What could have been done? That was playing over and over in my head. So she helped me to get over that. And then we, of course, went deeper in healing the grief from there.
That's great. Two things you said. One was the longing. I don't think people deal with the longing, because I didn't have a spouse pass away, but my brother, who was like really close to me, was like my best friend, solid friend. He died really early, right the day of his graduation, he died, you know. And
That
was like the total shock, you know. It was like, you know, what? Nobody, you know, this doesn't happen. It's not normal, you know. And the longing just to want to see him come back to the door. And you said, the second thing you said, that you kept repeating the days before. And you know what you made me think of is the scripture that says a reprobated mind. And reprobate is nothing but when you put yourself on repeat. And then you get into a state of depression. Like you said, it just, because you're always trying, I coulda, shoulda, woulda. And isn't that what gets us in trouble a lot in our own lives, when we do things on a normal basis? Coulda, shoulda, woulda always gets us stuck there, like, oh God, you know, we always keep doing that. So you know, that's important, you know, that therapy right there. Share with my audience, because I know they hear me all the time. Now they need to hear somebody, you know, who's professional as well. Talk about like getting away from that, because that keeps you stuck, you know. Talk about, you know, repeating things over and over.
For me, it started to, how I started to get myself out of it was writing. So I've always been a journaler. And so I started literally the day after the day after he passed, I started writing notes to myself. I would just grab a little notepad by my bed. And then I started to actually, it was easier for me to do it in my iPhone. So I would open up the notes app and I would just pour out like how I was feeling. I miss you. Like for more than a year, I wrote notes to my, you know, deceased husband because A, it made me feel still connected to him. But I had a safe place to then say the things that I was, those questions that kept going through my head or that sorrow that I wish I would have gotten you to the hospital sooner. I'm sorry. And then therapy. So between like pouring it out in notes and then talking to my therapist and unpacking with her and her helping me to see like, love, you like you couldn't have done anything differently. What really resonated for me when she told me, like, I did the best that I could. I did what I knew how. And that took a lot of weight off of me because I was acting as if I was a medical doctor and should have known the signs of heart attack. And like, you know, like, right? Like, I didn't go to medical school. How would I know? But I had put so much weight on myself. Like if I should have like weeks before and anybody who is with a Black man for long enough, you know, that's like pulling teeth anyways to get them to go to the hospital or to the doctor.
Yes.
So
just to get weighed, just you know, they're having a whole kissy fit, you know, come on.
Exactly. Just to get weighed, just to take the medicine they know they're supposed to take. You know you diabetic. Stop playing. You know you're not supposed to be eating that ice cream. So
Please.
So I had to separate my personal accountability from God's plan and the creator's plan. That's good. But also the doctor, he had a doctor. The doctor has some culpability. The emergency room staff had some culpability. Yeah. And finally, my husband had some responsibility for his own health and his own life.
Oh, this is great. This is so good. Oh, my goodness, Regina, please. Audience, you guys got to hear what she's saying. See how she broke it down? That was beautiful because we don't give everybody their culpability. We don't give everybody their part. You know, we don't. And that's so good. That's so good. Continue. I had to say that. Continue.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. But I think that's how people get stuck in their grief because you're carrying not only the sadness, you're carrying the sadness and the longing for the person, but you're almost always thinking of what you could have done to prevent. And sometimes there is nothing. I had to really grapple with that because, you know, I grew up in church. And I also grew up being, my parents really instilled in me a work ethic. And I thought that, oh, if I just work hard enough, if I'm a good girl, if I'm nice to people. And I write about this in the book that I felt that I did all the things, checked all the boxes, that nothing bad would happen to me. And baby, when I got the awakening, like... Like bad things happen to good people. Yeah. Bad things happen to anybody. And
yes, anybody. That's right.
Yeah. And you can't control
favoritism. You don't get points for that. No points.
And no gold stars, no extra credit.
None of that. None of it.
So that was literally shocking to me. I had to really accept it. Like, wait a minute. I can't outwork tragedy. I can't outpray it. I can't outlive it. Yeah. So that was a really powerful awakening that I had through my grief. And I'm thankful for that because now I can be at more peace in my life.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you're giving me, I'm getting like goose pimples. This is exactly from me. This is from me. I know it is. Audience, you guys better pick it up, put it down. She's doing it right now. And you have to listen to this because we want to be better, you know, and if somebody's got some jewels to give to us, to instruct us, you know, Regina's here for that, you know, and I'm loving everything you're saying. I'm loving everything you're saying. Now, how did that happen? Where did that come from? Do you?
Okay, well, at the risk of being a little bit of a spoiler, I hope y'all will still read the book because it's good. It's got some goodness. But Do You actually came from my husband, Al. Okay. So he, before he departed this realm, as I like to say, he had left me a text message. And if you read the book, you'll see I didn't discover the text message until a year or so later. Something prompted me. I was actually, it kind of goes back to that longing and that missing of your loved one. I got into this space where I was like, ooh, it had been long enough and I wanted to make sure I still had a record of him. I was like, let me find every picture. Let me find every voicemail. Right. I was trying to like make almost a capsule for myself and for my son of, of his memory. And so something kind of whispered to me, check your text messages to see what the last text message is so you can capture that. And sure enough, his last text to me said, "Do you, babe, don't worry about anything else."
Wow. That was definitely, that was a universal pull that definitely was there. That's beautiful. That is
I believe that wholeheartedly. And I got it tattooed on my left forearm because I wanted to always remember that.
Yes, that's good. That's good. So, you know what I want to talk about now? I know you don't know, but audience, my audience always is asking me, how do you transition? They always talk about relationships, right? So you're talking about your husband and he, I don't know how long ago he's passed, but could you give us some tips on how, now that you're going to, you've taken on counseling, you know how to use your tools, how do you transition now into loving someone else? Or is there steps to kind of let you taking on, moving on to the next relationship?
Ooh, okay. I love this question. This is where it gets juicy in the book too.
It's in the book. No, I want to know. Now I want to know.
I told you that I was with my husband for 21 years. So that he is literally the only man that I knew. And it's funny, he and I were, we grew up together. We'd become best friends. And, but we were also opposites attract. So we had different ways of seeing the world, different ways of operating in the world. But that was all I knew. And so about 8 months after he had passed, so keep in mind that I had gone through not only individual therapy, but I had gone through a grief group therapy as well. I'm a chronic overachiever, so I'm not doing just one thing, I'm doing all the things. So I was like, check, grief group, grief writing,
that's great.
Books. Praying, meditating, I'm doing the whole package.
Cover all the bases.
I'm doing the premium grief package. Yes. So I say that because I had accelerated my healing that way to be able to receive someone new. So about 8 months after my husband passed, I wasn't thinking I was going to meet someone new. I just wanted to have some companionship again. I wanted to really just date. I wanted to go out there and just start to meet people, start to have fun again. And I had told my therapist that, and I instantly felt guilty. I felt like I was cheating on my husband. I felt like people would judge me, like, how dare you, start dating again? It's been less than a year. All the things that we worry about, when we don't put ourselves first, we worry about all the things people will say. So she helped me, my therapist helped me to understand that A, it's normal to want connection again. And she asked me, and I write about this as well in the book. She asked me one question that helped me. She said, "What would Al want for you?" And
ooh, that's good.
I teared up and I immediately said he would want me to be happy again. Like, he literally has said that to me. If anything happens to me, I want you to find love again. And so with that, it's all serendipitous. I ended up going out with some friends of mine, friends from high school. We had kind of stayed in touch loosely over the years, but they came back into my life to support me after the loss. And we went out for drinks one night, and my girlfriend, she had met a guy online. She wanted to bring him out with us. And we're like, he can come if he has some friends. And he had friends, and me,
oh, goodness.
One of the friends, like, it was on and popping. So we met, you know, kind of in this serendipitous way, me and the friend, and he and I are together to this day.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, you're giving some of us really some hope, and really making it clear, you know, and that we can really move on from this, because, you know, we've seen some people, even some of my clients are stuck right there. And I was like, you're still holding on to this. You know, it's like having your hand grabbing onto this and trying to reach over here, and you can't do it. You know, you just can't do it. So you have to, like you said, you wanted to accelerate your the way that you're going to greet someone else in your life. You wanted to accelerate your love. You really did. So you did the work, and that's what it takes, is letting. Sometimes you don't want to let go. And I've seen this even with men. They don't want to, you know, they say, oh, I feel guilty. And they don't think that's part of the grief. And I just said this today, we don't feel our emotions enough. And I'm so glad you talked about every emotion. You covered every emotion.
I had them all in some. We're supposed to
feel it. Yeah, and we're supposed to feel them. That's the thing is, you know, we're supposed to feel them. And when we do suppress them, what happens is we get really depressed. Suppression creates depression. So it just true. Does it, right? Right?
So true. And I think I'm sure a lot of your listeners can relate to this, growing up as a Black woman in this country, or Black people in general, but certainly as Black women, we are taught to be strong all the time, no matter what. And so I have one of the chapters in the book. Yeah, I titled one of the chapters Strong Black Woman, because I came into my grief initially trying to be strong. I didn't even know how to feel. Yeah. I have not allowed myself to feel the depths of my feelings since I was a little girl.
Wow.
Right? Because you get raised I was raised by my parents to, like, nope, keep going, suck it up, life is hard. And then society.
Then you die. That's what they tell you.
Then you die, right?
Then you die.
Hey, come on, Black people.
Nothing in between. Nothing in between. Just die. Just to say.
And we know that comes from a place of trauma, that comes from a place of striving, because we haven't always had. So, but for me, the unintended consequences is that forced me to, like, comport myself in a way where I couldn't be vulnerable. Like, I was working in corporate America for almost 20 years. I couldn't show any weakness. I couldn't show any, like, you better believe I had to lock it up and keep it together. Suck it up and be prepared. I remember one time, I don't write this in the book, but one time we were going through financial hardships and our car was getting repossessed. I couldn't tell anybody at work that we were going through that kind of stuff. You better believe I showed up anyways. And on the I was like, is my car going to come back? Like, and we gonna get it from the tow yard. But I say all that to say that is what I came into my grief with, this, okay, I have to be strong. But being off, I ended up taking 3 months off of work. And just with that, I had no choice but to look at myself and feel it and deal with it, especially in therapy. Right. You can't run from your emotions in therapy.
No.
Not if you're doing it right.
And that's it. Not if, and you got to be participating. You got to be willing to participate. And it's all, the therapist does nothing but listen. Mm-hmm. And maybe give you one or two directions and tell you, you have the capability to do this because you have this. It's really listening. And I like how you could talk and don't care about anybody else. It's like, I don't even ask her how she's doing. Right now, I don't care. It's all about me. You know, when I'm in therapy, it's all about me and what I'm going through, what I'm feeling, what I'm trying to accomplish. It's all about me. And that's what I love about therapy. You know, I love it because I still go. I still go because, you know, us working with clients, you know how that is. Working with clients and they might trigger you. Healing is just that. It's not healed up. It's healing, and it's a process. It's a whole process. Okay?
I love that. It's a process. I love that. It's so true. It's ongoing process.
Yeah, it is. It's like we're like onions, and you know, there's these inside of the onion is these little small sweet ones that they always, the French love to eat. They're real small, but we grow them out really big. Now think of us peeling off all those things over the years after the sweet stuff is there, right? We have to peel it off. And as we peel, we cry and we feel emotions, you know, and we go through things, we act up, we show out, you know, all of that. We need to get to that place that we can accept that this happens. Mm-hmm. And it's okay, you know, it's okay. Hey, you know, I the best thing that ever happened to me during therapy is to know that it was okay for me to feel like this. It was okay. Because I'm thinking I was broken, you know, messed up, was not capable. And he's like, it's okay to feel like that. When that hit me, it was like, what? I'm entitled to feel this way? I mean, really, the strong woman and the good girl syndrome had me. Those two syndromes had me. And I was like, wait, what? I can be miserable like this? Yeah. And but she said, but you can't stay that way. You can't stay that way.
That's the key.
Always cry. She said, all you cry, you can cry, but with a plan. You know, with a motive, with a solution. What's the solution? You can cry. I told somebody today, go ahead and cry. Get it all out. Now, once you finish crying, tell me what you're going to do about it.
Mm. I love that. First of all, I love the onion analogy. I've never heard it said like that before, and that's beautiful. So first of all, that's a sweet onion on the inside.
inside. The French eat it all the time. It's so little and cute. They cook them all whole, and it's so, it doesn't even taste nothing like an onion. And I really tell you, I've tried. I was like, this doesn't taste like no onion. Well, you know, and I'm like, they said it's the inside of the onion. It's a very tiny part of it. I was like, oh, okay. Mm. So, yeah.
That's beautiful. And the feeling is right. Like I love how you describe the good girl syndrome because, right, you feel like you don't even have the permission to be upset with anyone. You don't have the permission to have expectations of other people.
Nope.
You're supposed to just carry the weight of the world. Like I felt like I just had to take on everybody's emotion. And especially me, I'm an empath. So I can sense people's emotions and energies really strongly.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would take all that on and think I had to carry it and not honor my own feelings and my own wants and desires.
That's right.
And that's so much of what Do You is about too. Through this book, I start to learn like, wait a minute, I have not only agency to live my life however I want, and I can feel how I want to feel. I can enjoy life. I don't have to suffer. And so I discovered that through this journey of just trying new things and seeing how I felt, seeing if I liked it, see if I traveled a lot, I cried a lot. I did a lot.
We did a lot.
And I learned how to do me. Yeah. So that's really the other gift I want to offer people is that life is a lot about trial and error at the end of the day, what you choose to do when you get knocked on the ground.
Right. Right. And doing you, you know, as you were talking about this and how your husband even knew that you should be doing you. He knew it. So he was the outside looking in at you and saying, she's got to do her. You know, yeah. She's got to do it. So he, you know, even he knew it. And that just puts me in the mindset that people know that you're different. Like, and I was telling someone today, I could be in a room. We all could be in a room of coaches, authors, whoever they want to be. But guess what? Somebody can have the same title as you, same book title as you, do you. But ain't nobody doing it better you than me. Right. Nobody's doing it better than you. Nobody's doing it better than you. So you know what I'm saying? So no matter what you say, your book is your same title as mine, I guarantee it isn't. I guarantee you're going to say either do you or do you. You know, you're going to put emphasis on, once you read my book, it's going to be do you.
Okay. Exactly, boo.
That's what's going to bring about, because we need to live, like you said, authentic. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think your husband was saying to you. Get back to yourself. You got so much to give. You know, you have so much to give in this world. Get back to being you.
Yes, that, oh my gosh, he absolutely was saying that. And he, because he knew me like, you know, almost no one else knew me, spending that much time together. And he knew I had a light and a fire inside of me that I had been like dampering and trying to control and not being authentic. Right. And so that when he said that, that's why it was so powerful for me. And I think it's a powerful message for everybody, because if we can just get back to that essence of who we are and do that to the fullest, like so many of our problems would go away.
Yeah. Do you think corporate America and its toxicity, emphasize your light going out a little bit?
Absolutely. I think there's a few reasons for that. I think for one, corporate is all about doing things at scale efficiently. Like you form a corporation, right? You form it. When you get to that level of having a corporation where you have thousands of people working, it is about generating a profit as quickly and efficiently as possible. And to do that, you have to have a lot of little cogs in the wheel to make that happen. You can't have cogs over here trying to do their own thing. You need them. It's almost like the military. You need them to fall in line and do what you need them to do to get that outcome, to get those earnings every quarter, or to get that growth year over year.
Right.
Now, if you're lucky, you work for maybe a smaller company or a more progressive company that understands that the more that you allow people to be their authentic self, you get to that outcome better.
And faster,
right? But that's not the old school way of corporations. We come from, it's a very tops down, hierarchical, do what we say, put your head down, butts in seats. Yep. We might give you a 3% raise this year, or we might not. So yes, that forced me to make sure that I was in line, especially as a Black woman trying to climb the corporate ladder, because there were very few Black women leaders, very few Black people, even fewer women in those spaces. So I had to play the game and play along and conform and do all the things.
Yeah, sounds right.
And that takes a toll. That makes you forget who you really are, as you're trying to code switch and do all the things to fit into that corporate box. Yeah.
I often think that when we say we wear many hats, but God says that we will have many gifts. And I often think that code switching has to do with the many hats. So I didn't learn this until many, you know, maybe years later. I've been raised in the church as well, you know, and working in the church till about 29, 30 years old. You know, I gave a big chunk of my life to it, you know. And I remember even coding there, like even coding in the church, like, you know, emotions could not be displayed
at all,
and you'd have to get that under control. And the only time that you were even emotional is when it had to do with under the Spirit of God.
Oh yes, the Holy Ghost. That was
yes, totally under that. And, you know, and then even when I was, I guess, orchestrating or acting that way, I was like, I'm really upset about this. You know, I'm like, I'm really telling God that I'm upset about this, but I'm not articulating it. But I'm acting out as a child. Like, I'm telling God, like, you know, I'm mad about my marriage not working. I'm so mad and I'm crying. And here I am supposed to be. And I think I could share this with you. And I'm sharing it with my audience. You're supposed to be under the Spirit. But in the back of my mind, I'm saying, I'm so mad about A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. And God, you need to think about it. And I'm crying, I'm slobbing, I'm all this stuff. And then after I get up, I wonder now, what next? I never knew what to do next.
Yeah.
So I think coding is across the board everywhere. But until I learned that these are every ability we have is a gift. Mm. It's the way we use it.
So true. We use it. So true.
So I got rid of coding, got rid of mini hats. I don't want to say that no more. I have gifts.
Yes. Ooh. And that's doing you as well when you can figure yes. out what your gifts are and get yes. a space in your life where you can utilize them. And yeah. and that's really ultimately why I left corporate. I don't think corporations are inherently bad. I actually think that they can be a useful training ground. They certainly, if you're intentional, you can go in, get the bag and parachute out like I did, right? You got to be intentional.
Intentional.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Part of the plan.
And I had a plan going into like even starting the job at Instagram. I knew that I didn't want to be in corporate for the rest of my life. So my plan was for that to be my last role before I stepped out on my own.
Yes.
I didn't know the timing. I certainly couldn't anticipate. I didn't know, you know, of course it was going to happen faster than I thought. And I didn't anticipate my husband passing away. But I at least planted that seed in my mind that if I can come and do this one last rodeo, if you will, and get this good tech money, then bolster up my savings, make sure I have, you know, the means to send my son to college, which thank God I'm able to do. But that gave me the foundation to then step out. And now I feel like all of those gifts, all those latent gifts that I wasn't able to fully use at corporate, I can now apply that to my own business and in my life.
Yes. And that's great. I love that. Now, see, I was going to answer something about business. You already answered the question. I just want to know now, you know, we talk to a lot of thought leaders and you are one of those. We talk to a lot of entrepreneurs and you are one of those. And we talk to authors. I want to, you know, just ask you, what's one of the things that made your book, like, get out there, like in marketing? How did you give us one little tip that got your book out there in front of everyone?
Ooh, great question. So one of the things that I decided to do was get a publicist that specializes in book promotions. And a lot of people don't think about, you know, a lot of people aren't familiar with, or maybe you generally know about PR, but that's not, you know, accessible to most people. And I certainly didn't understand that there were publicists that specialize in the book industry. Yes. And so once I learned that, and that was actually through my book coach. So I, another tip that I have is like, get the resources that you need to help make your writing process easier.
Right.
I started this book when I was working full time. I was still in my executive role at Meta. I didn't have time to necessarily write a book, but I was convicted. I knew I needed to tell my story. And I found a book coach, and she helped me put me on a regimen to get the book written in about 7 months.
Yeah.
And through her and her network, I found kind of various publicists and decided to pick one that could help me get my book out and help me to get on podcasts like yours and get that visibility. Now, I realize that that's not accessible to everyone. However, within whatever your budget or your means, there's an app that I just discovered called Quoted that journalists go on to look for experts and look for stories. So something like that, if you can't afford a publicist, get on Quoted and see if you can be, you know, an expert in a journalist story as a way to get your message. Yeah. Use LinkedIn. I've been steady dripping content on. So for me, it'll depend what your preferred social media platform is.
Yeah.
I'm in the auntie stage of my life, so I haven't done TikTok. I'm enjoying my auntiehood. So I take, not to, you know, no shade of TikTok looks fun, but I'm not there yet. For me, my tribe is on LinkedIn because I've been in corporate. I have all the professional connections. So that's a free way to market my book and tell little stories. So that would be the other tip. If, you know, a publicist, if you can, or pitch yourself and use social media.
Yeah. Would you say that consistency is a part of that?
Oh my God.
To get a publicist, be consistent.
Yes. And I'm learning to be more consistent with the social media. You would think that coming from Instagram, one of the biggest social media companies in the world, you would think I would be an influencer over here. I'm just as much of a mess on the platform as most other people. So I'm trying, like the rest of y'all, to get my posts out and schedule them and be consistent. But yeah, that is key. The more I post, I see more engagement and I see more people, you know, being touched by the message. So
yes. Okay. So you heard it from Regina Lawless. She is telling us all business. Okay, she done told us all the business. And we need to be on about our business, being ourselves, doing us, doing you. And I really appreciate you. We appreciate every diamond, every ruby, every pearl that you drop, because every bit of it is a way that we're going to grow. And I'm so thankful for you. Thankful for just, you know, you sharing a lot of, you know, because we both grow from what we know. We touch each other's lives. I didn't know that. Oh, you get touched by something, and you spark. I didn't know that. And you grow just a little bit more. Audience, we hope that you get something out of this. Remember, you gotta look up Regina Lawless. She's got an original name. You'll find her. Don't worry, you'll find her. You'll find her. Google her. You know, she's probably on Instagram, but she's not there. You know, she's not there. You know, she's getting there, but she's on LinkedIn. Yes. So you'll find her. I know that she's around. Look for her book, Do You. Read it. Review it. Right?
Yes. Please review it. Please review it, y'all.
Okay. All right. So thank you so much for being here. And this is Edna White and my esteemed guest, Regina Lawless, saying good night and goodbye. See you later. For now.
Bye, y'all.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, everybody, I'm Naomi Ekperigin.
And I'm Andy Beckerman.
We're a real-life couple and a real-life couple of comedians. And we're the hosts of the podcast Couples Therapy.
We're the only comedy relationship podcast ever. Yeah, I said it. And we're so good, we've been written up in both the New York Times and we made Grindr's list of top podcasts.
Yes, we're giving you that high-low appeal, trust. On the show, we talk to guests like Bob the Drag Queen, Angelica Ross,
Bowen Yang, Janelle James, Danny Pudi, Darcy Carden, Paul F. Tompkins,
and more.
all about love, mental health, and everything in between. And we answer your relationship questions. We are two unlicensed comedians just trying to help you out.
So open your hearts, loosen your butts, because we got a lot of laughs
and a lot of real talk just for you.
Download Couples Therapy wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.